Hello and welcome to recording number 17 of Gary Gygax's Sea of Death, an annotated reading. Today is September 20th, 2021. We left off, unfortunately, not yesterday, but the day before. Sorry about the problems with Comcast. Gord and Lita and four of the nomads have made it across and part of the sea of dust there, and they've discovered projecting out from the dust the top of a ruin, but not so much that it is anything but like a little projection. So the nomads were very excited, thinking this is an undiscovered ruin. There was, if you look at the Darlene maps, you can see that there are ruins nearby on the map, and the one over on the right, that the nomads knew about that ruin. They had been looting it, but this one instead, Gord is headed for the city out of mind, and so instead he goes all the way, and they're heading south. And that's where they discover this ruin, so that the nomads are very excited. Now, at the top, they dig down and they find a hatch of wood. And what that signals is that this had to have been protected from the rain of colorless fire. If it didn't have some magical protection, it certainly would have burnt up the wooden hatch at the top. It's questionable whether it would burn stone, but it definitely would have burnt away all that wood. So here is, it's as they dig down, they open up the hatch and they go down into this, what they now know as a temple. And Gord and Lita are looking for water while the nomads are looking for treasure. So they, Gord and Lita go down and down and down. And they do, they find the remains in the cistern underneath, dug into the stone beneath the temple. So they're now below the ash, and they're now at a point where they're going into the old level area of the Sul Imperium, this Sul Imperium temple. They go down, and they do. They find a cistern, they find water, but also strange things are happening with Lita. Lita is a clone of Eclavdra, and she's starting to regain the memories. And as she regained the memories, she becomes more and more like Eclavdra and that haughty drow. So Gord is in love with her, but he does not want her to change into someone like Eclavdra. So anyway, they decide to go look for the nomads and tell them that there's water. And they find them, one of them dying of poison, and the three others are frozen looking at a chest of treasure. Now, Lita is discovering these magical powers, and she is able to neutralize the poison in the poison nomad, and then they shake the others free from their enchantment over the treasure. Now, just as this is happening, Ord hears approaching footsteps through the doorway they just entered, and he goes up. They shut the door, but something is coming, going to come through the door. They're all prepared, they're drawing swords, and that was the end of the chapter. So today, we continue from that point, and it is chapter 12, page 193. We are now halfway through the book. All right, I'm starting off on paragraph 1. A living wall of albino apes was coming through the doorway. Their faces twisted in snarling expressions, showing their yellow canines, but making no sound. The mute, baboon-like things began to plow through the opening. The front wave had impacted the partially open door and pushed it inward. Because they had paused outside the door and thereby lost their momentum, and because the portal was heavy and not easily moved, the beast's initial entry was slow. The apes behind the first wave had opportunity to build up some speed in the corridor, and they ran over the ones in front of them. The result was that a few of the apes were stunned or injured by their allies, and the haphazard nature of the charge gave the adventurers inside the room a few valuable seconds to prepare for the onslaught. From his position beside the door, Ord was able to strike and defend himself at the same time. As the initial wave surged into the room, he thrust one through the neck with his sword as he gutted the one nearest him with his long dagger. The apes did not come for Gord right away, since he stood out of their line of movement. This gave him a couple of moments to assess the situation as the albino beast fanned out and began to advance upon the others. There were still 4 or 5 dozen of the little apes on their feet, Gord figured. Most of them were not rushing forward recklessly now, but were circling and shuffling, looking for ways. Pardon me. To put their teeth and claws to use without being hurt themselves. The 3 healthy Thufi nomads had formed themselves into a rough circle around Nizami. They slashed and thrust with their blades, keeping most of the apes at bay, and doing in a couple of the beasts that got too close. Meanwhile, Lita had found her secluded corner and escaped the immediate attention of the ape things because of her isolation. As Gord cast his gaze toward her, the dark elven girl was reaching up to where the natural ceiling of the chamber curved down to meet the wall. She broke off a handful of tiny stalactites and held them aloft for a few seconds. Gord was bewildered by this. Was she intending to use these tiny things as weapons? If so, they would not last long or do much damage. Figuring that the Thufi warriors could fend for themselves for the time being, Gord began using both of his blades to hack and slash a path across the room to the corner where Lita was located. "Keep them off me, Gord," Lita called to him as he approached. "I'll do my best," Gord replied. As he got closer, he saw that stalagmite-like spikes had sprouted up from the stone floor of the chamber all around Lita. These protrusions were from 1/4 foot to 1 foot long, serrated about 1 foot apart and sharply tapered. The little monsters that were trying to get at Lita were having a hard time of it. Apparently the hedge of spikes had sprung up just as they were about to strike. A 6 of the ape creatures lay dead and paled upon the field of stone spires. All right. The albino apes here. I'm not quite sure. Now, later on, there were some creatures that I believe they introduced that were similar not only to the albino apes, but later on other creatures that we meet within this story. So, we see more of these. Now, they're being felled pretty easily. And I also wonder about the magic spell that Lita is conjuring up. Remember, it was said last time that she's a cleric. And it's commented that they had no idea what was coming through the door. I know, I thought so myself, and it could be one of the ickier things, but these are more or less like, the ground troops, and they're certainly taking a bit of a beating from both Gord and Lita. It seems like the 3 nomads are faring for themselves, but that could change at any moment.
There was a bit of a Lovecraftian buildup with the sounds and, quiet, a little bit of horror in there.
Yeah, and that, I think, is, essential for adding to the Sea of Death campaign. The ruins beneath and these things, they definitely should be, there should be an element of horror I feel when you're doing it, and like I said, there's the Clark Ashton Smith Abomination of Yondo, which I think goes very well with ideas for what you could find among the Sea of Death. You know, if there was like a large span of water, it could have turned into some strange mire after the dust and ash had something, perhaps sunk deeper into whatever water there may have been. I know that several people are thinking that there would be an inland sea within the Sul Imperium, perhaps one that had an outlet out to the ocean. You know, that could definitely be an additional thing. You can imagine the ash slowly, becoming a mire, mixing in with, say, a large body of water, and mutating, because the ash itself, from the grain of colorless fire, is not normal. The volcanic ash falling down is relatively normal, but not this rain of colorless fire ash, and it seems to be the source of most of the mutations, kind of like Lovecraft's Color Out of Space, where it caused the terrible transformation of the farmer's family. All right, I am going to restart, and it is the bottom paragraph, the last paragraph of page 194. In one place, three of the corpses formed a line that led through the spiky area. If the beasts behind these dead ones had thought about it and used the bodies of their packmates as a bridge, they could have been upon the girl before Gord got to the scene. However, the ones still alive seemed to get more excited at the sight and smell of so much blood. In their lust, they were so eager to get to Leda that some more of them fell on the spikes, and others fought and tore at one another for the privilege of using the pathway of bodies, with the result that none of them actually got that far. Had these terrible little apes been other than mute, the room would have been a bedlam of snarling and howling, but the things attacked without sound and died in silent agony. Tensing his muscles, Gord slashed around him to clear away the little apes that were pressing round to attack, took one step backward, and then sprang forward with a bound. He cleared the hedge of spikes and landed beside the girl. "Don't worry anymore, Leda," he said to her over his shoulder. Without turning toward him, the dark elf called her thanks, then added, "If you can manage to keep me safe for another minute, Gord, I'll give these little bastards something to be sorry about." "You've got it," the young man said, just as he got very busy. So many of the apes had died on the spikes that now there were pathways in many places, and he had all he could do to stem the tide. He thrust and cut in a blur of motion, seeming to be everywhere at once. Although he bled from a bitten thigh and arm, and the monster's nails had clawed cheek and leg, Gord was not seriously hurt. He had lost count of how many of the yellow-haired white apoids he had killed. Out of the corner of his eye, Gord saw Leda crouching down next to one of the dead apes. He wanted to ask her what she was doing, but then he heard the girl start chanting, and knew that she was working some spell, so he dared not interrupt. All right, break. So these are white apes with yellow hair. So I'm picturing. Something almost like the, you know, mutes. It's a very strange combination here. Yeah, and Gord is Gord has now become such a high level that, you know, Gygax is not trying to show this as a fight. Gord's basically just slaughtering them one after another, I think. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 195 and the final paragraph. An apling leaped through the air, mouth agape, fangs bared to bite off his face. Gord caught the thing with dagger and sword, the shorter blade taking the apoid through its upper jaw, the longer one piercing its abdomen. He held the creature above his head for a moment, its blood dripping down upon him in a gory shower. Then, using all his might, Gord hurled the corpse full into a trio of its charging fellows. Two of them were knocked down and stunned, and one was driven backward to die writhing upon the stone spikes. "That does it, Gord. I'll be fine now. See if the others need help," Lita shouted to him. Then, in a different, deeper voice, the dark elf said, "To me, aplings, kill any of your fellows that come near." Gord turned quickly to look at her. Lita was gesturing to the forms of the dead baboons nearby, and the corpses were responding. Before his eyes, about a dozen of the dead apes rose up, blood smeared, entrails spilling, to form a crescent around the girl, their backs toward her, facing their own living kind with ready fangs. Indeed, Lita seemed able to care for herself, with some strange and grisly assistance, so Gord took advantage of the moment to go to the aid of the hard-pressed nomad warriors. "Who can play your game?" Gord shouted to the mute creatures that had momentarily recoiled from the stone spikes and the fury of the young adventurer's blood-drenched blades. He sprang upon the bridge of dead monsters, stabbing and thrusting as he advanced, and fought to the side of the spiky area farthest from Lita. The apelings there sought to recoil from the savagery of their foe, but those behind the ones in front were not quick enough. A severed head flew, another baboon, its arm lopped off, fell writhing on the hard, blood-covered floor of the chamber. Using each weapon stroke with murderous efficiency, whirling and darting continually, Gord chopped his way through the pack. Now the survivors were moving backward toward the chamber door, and Gord was able to get clear and join the beleaguered nomads. Another of the men had fallen beside Nizami, but Achuka and the one called Jamat were still holding their own. "Die, die," he shouted over and over, as the young adventurer fell upon the group of things that were between him and the stepmen. Two of the yellow-maned baboons fell instantly, caught from behind as Gord assaulted them like a whirlwind. Heartened by this, the two tribesmen still able to fight redoubled their own efforts, calling Illithufi, Illithufi, as they struck about them with their swords. All right, so... Lita is throwing... Now, Chris has posted the Animate Dead spell. Lita has definitely done an Animate Dead. It had a little longer casting time because if we're now beyond TSR, if Gygax is still using these rules. But it is, it created skeletons or zombies, and these are still, fleshy creatures, so they'd probably be a zombie. And she's created at least a dozen of them, which kind of, in this AD&D's rule system, would have put them around, like 12th level. And that is not, that is not unreasonable for Lita to be. So Lita may be 12th or beyond right here. Or if Gygax is even using the level system. Now, the other thing that we get right here, there is Gord's war cry. And we're seeing them about these massive, what I assume are very low level, ape creatures, the albino, but still yellow haired, albino apes. That seems like, I'm have a hard time picturing what, Gygax means by that. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 197 and the third paragraph. And before I begin, there's a question. Does Gord know who Ecclabdra is? No, he should not. He should only recognize her as a drow. At first, it seemed like Gord was confused about her earlier in the story, but Gygax had already introduced the drow when Gord was back years ago, back in Greyhawk as Black Cat. So he should know what a drow is. And then more recently, at the beginning of this book, it was stated that drow and half-drow were in the city of Divers. So they should not be like a complete unknown. So he should know drow, but not a Ecclabdra. All right. Page 197, third paragraph here. Gord cleared a path through the dozen or so apoids who were clustered to attack the tribesmen. Counting those already killed by the nomads, not half of the creatures were left alive. The remainder turned suddenly in panic or fear, bounding and capering to escape from this red-smeared room and the terrible humans who were cutting them down in droves. Gord thought that some spell of Leda's might be at work, helping the panic to wash over these near mindless little killers, but he didn't spend any time dwelling on the matter. "Cut them down," he called to the two nomads, and then the young thief leaped after the routing troop of albino monsters, leaving red tracks wherever his blades touched their blonde-maned heads or dead white backs as the things sought to flee. Break. So that is the baboon-like, and yet with a head of yellow hair, but their general fur is albino white. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 197, and we're on the third paragraph from the end. Both Al-Ila Thufi warriors joined Gord in the work of slaying the apes as they scrambled to get clear of the chamber and back to the safety of wherever they had come from. Then from outside the chamber in the passage, where the remainder of the pack was routing through, human voices cursed and shouted, "Stop!" and "Back! Back!" echoed in the arched corridor beyond the doorway. "Kill and obey!" could be heard as deep-voiced commands directed to the retreating monsters. The two Thufi warriors were busy finishing off some wounded apoids that were thrashing about or attempting to crawl to escape. As the voices shouted their orders to the things beyond, Gord acted to delay a second inrush of the terrible little monsters, kicking aside a carcass and cleaving one of the braver apes as it tried to re-enter the chamber. The young man grabbed the thick door with his left hand and began to swing it back toward the closed position. A flying spear grazed his shoulder, for the light coming from inside the room made Gord a distinct target. In the next instant, the swinging door stopped and bounced back slightly, as if it had struck something. As the door rebounded, there was a thud and an audible groan from the empty air, and amazingly, a crossbow bolt that had been heading directly for Gord abruptly stopped in mid-air. Scarcely a second later, a heavy billet of wood with protruding spikes came flying through the doorway and struck Gord's chest. The spear wound was only a trifle, and the hurled Achilles, as the spike club was called, did little more than bruise Gord, for the mesh of elfin armor beneath his robe warded off the piercing iron hooks and points. But the metal projections of the Achilles caught on the heavy cloth of Gord's burnoise, and the one outside the chamber who had thrown the weapon hauled hard on the leather thong attached to the club's handle. Gord was jerked from his feet and toppled headlong toward the stone floor. Before he struck the rough granite, however, something only scarcely softer broke his fall. Fortunately, Gord's comrades were right behind him as all this occurred. Achilka grabbed Gord's feet and hauled him out of the doorway and back into the room, just as Leda got behind the half-closed portal and shoved with all her strength against its thick planks. The door banged closed, and an instant later, Leda dropped its bar down. In the interim, several more spears and a half dozen quarrels had been discharged into the room, but none had scored a hit. More missiles could be heard thudding into the planks, and the great door, even as the dark elf shut it fast. All right, now, Chris is posted here what an Achilles looks like. The Achilles is a hooked throwing club with a 20-foot-long cord, usually of woven leather. The hook allows you to make trip attacks at range. Some Achilles have holes drilled through them and whistle when flung. Now, that's from a Pathfinder equipment book, but Gord's the ones he's describing seem also to have more hooks generally on them, so that they can actually like hooks on a fishing net.
Yeah, it was pretty difficult finding anything with a picture of that.
Yeah, and so it sounds like it's like much more hard to handle than you'd think, because it would be down from that hooked head. It seems like there'd be barbed hooks attached or like drilled into this. So
and
that
I guess she would swing it with the chain and then let it fly that way, or?
I don't know. Perhaps the handle is free and you simply throw it and then keep hold of the leather thonged 20-foot cord. So that you can get a good throw, maybe like throwing an axe over your shoulder. You know, if you've seen them, an axe throwing, or they get a really good backhand, then straight forward, and hope for piercing the main hook, but also looking to entangle with the smaller hooks.
And then you could kind of haul people back in like it was a grappling hook or something.
That's right. And even more so, because I believe this is saying there's smaller hooks to it. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 198 and the final paragraph. The invisible mass that had held Gord away from contact. I'm sorry, pardon me there. Invisible mass that had held Gord away from contact with the floor had been dragged into the chamber along with the thief. Grateful for this invisible cushion, but unnerved by the whole affair at the same time, Gord hurriedly hoisted himself to his feet. The young adventurer bent down and prodded the seemingly empty air with his sword point. The weapon encountered a solid something. Leda knelt beside the area and felt around, her hands moving swiftly over the unseeable thing they touched. A moment later, she held a strange ring in her fingers, and a very visible dead body was lying face down at her feet. Invisibility ring, she said to Gord, and the nomads, as she put the loop of dull metal into her sash. He is a strange-looking sort, she added, gazing down at the form. The corpse was that of a thin, pygmy-like albino, a human who closely resembled the yellow-maned baboons that had attacked them. He was slain by that little bolt. Gord observed, noticing the object that was protruding from the corpse's upper back. Flesh is black around the shaft. Poison. Yes, Lita answered. Are either of you wounded? She then asked, turning to the nomads. Not heavily, and not from such missiles, Achuka replied. Although I fear that the apes have done for our brothers. Perhaps we were too hasty in removing the Aradan charms. Lita interrupted. Lord, see what you can do about blocking the door, she said. Those beyond are sure to try to force it, magically or physically. Meanwhile, I'll see what I can do for our friends. All right, break. So we're seeing Lita's powers, growing. I had assumed that maybe this invisible thing was like, a magical, platform or something, like a tensor's floating disc of some sort. But here it's the actual body of a dead albino pygmy. Now, that is worth noting. This is, and wearing a very powerful item, an invisibility ring. And these albino pygmies, later on, I think they changed them for the book and called, for a second edition and called them Darrow. I'm not sure. I think the Darrow were supposed to be albino dwarven like things. Right. I'm going to restart. And it is age 199. It's the final paragraph. As Lita turned to her spellwork, Gord did what he could. First he took the spear that had been cast into the room and jammed the point into the door so that it kept the bar held down in a locking position. Then the young adventurer began to toss the bodies of the dead baboons into a mound that further blocked the portal. By the time he had made a pile as high as his chest and was dragging the last of the lifeless creatures over to finish the task, Lita had completed her ministrations and come to his side. Nazimi is finished, she whispered to the young man. Those filthy apelings did for him. The other three will be fine in a few days. Even though I hadn't sufficient power to heal them fully, I knew that you'd also need some of my magic, Gord, for you are a mess of wounds. Now hold still, and I'll do what I can to cure the worst of them. After a few seconds spent murmuring and gesturing, a dark elven girl began to touch Gord here and there, each probe on a painful area. Each making him want to wince and draw away. His pride kept him motionless and silent. Then her touch seemed to grow lighter and cooler, and was no longer painful. "You're doing it, girl," he said. "I've done it, man," she said with a tired swipe at her blood-smeared forehead. The three nomads were on their feet and cleaning their swords. As Lita sat down on the floor next to Gord to rest, fatigue showing plainly on her lovely face, Achuka walked over to where the two were. "We will be ready to fight again in a little while, Farziel. We owe you and your warrior woman our lives. We will fight with you to the death for that, but, Gord said with puzzlement, "if we manage to live and get clear of this place," the nomad said solemnly, "we will go no farther into the Ashen Desert. Two of our brothers have fought their last because of this place, desert and ruin. We will take our chances and go back alone if need be, or with you two. If you are wise, it is not the way. If you are wise, it is not the way to repay a debt of life, Farzeal. But neither is dying uselessly a measure of manhood. Before Gord could speak, Leda answered the warrior's pronouncement. We are held fast within this place, Thufi. Let us deal with the matter at hand before worrying about going north or south above. Such talk is so much wind until our enemies outside the door are dead. Yes, and as Chris points out, that is a thing of friendly fire. Dangerous. Now, these are the Darrow. And what they've done here, I believe, is that and this immediately says dwarf-like stature, but instead, I think they've later on made them out-and-out dwarves, albino subterranean dwarves. Notice the Akli that they're using right there. I don't think it is named. It's just shown in the illustration. My belief is that these should not be that the pygmy creatures are pygmy Sul and not Darrow. I don't think they're ever called Darrow within the book, but we'll see. So the friendly fire, here we have one of these terrible creatures slain by its own poisoned shot, but not its own, but a poisoned shot striking it in the back. And not only the danger of shooting into melee, but the danger of using an invisibility ring or spell when you are, involved in melee. It's great for sneaking around, but when your own people are firing, they can't see you either. So that is a nice little bit there added by Gygax of the albino Sul. Albino pygmy soul killed by a dart from its own companion. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 201. And first paragraph. Achuka smiled grimly at that, hefting his tulwar. We will do that, dark warrior lady, never fear. We can remain bottled up in this chamber for a long time, Leda, Gord said, to bring things back to the reality of the situation, and we can die quietly in doing so. I also think that talk is foolish, and so is this hiding. Our foes can regroup and gather reinforcements if given enough time. That enables them to come at us when they are ready. Instead, let's prepare to attack them now. And fight the battle on our terms. Everyone was quiet for a moment, and in the interval the clank of weapon on stone and the shuffling of feet could be heard outside the barricaded doorway. You make good sense, Gord, Leda said. I will do what I can, although I have little left in the way of spells. Once I am done with the priestess craft, I will take up poor Nizami's sword and do the best I can to fight by your side. The nomad warriors struck their breasts at Leda's words, a signal honor. Gord, too, was bolstered by what the little elven girl had said. Be ready, then, my dearest lady. Lay on with spell and weapon, he told her. We four will clear the door and attack when you give the word. In a couple of minutes, the four men had quietly unstacked the mound of corpses that Gord had piled up, and all five of the comrades gathered at a spot away from the doorway so they could not be overheard, and Leda explained her strategy. Jama and Gord will open the door, she said. Do not look out right away when he pulls open the portal, for I will cast a spell there to disorient the enemy. When I shout, then you will be able to look, and the passage will be lighted. You other two, loose arrows as quickly as you can, and then all charge to the foe with your blades. Gord had no bow. He could use the spear that had been thrown into the chamber, and he would throw that as he rushed to close quarters with the apelings and their masters, who waited outside. Jamat stepped to the door and put his hands on the heavy iron ring that hung stapled to the planks. Gord lifted the bar softly, placing it firmly in its upright position, and securing it with another little bar that kept it from falling and accidentally locking the portal. A precaution made by the ancient keepers of this stronghold centuries ago. The other two Thufi warriors were crouched a few feet away behind a wall of baboon bodies, their bows ready. Gord looked at Jamut and nodded. As the nomad pulled on the door ring, Gord jumped back to be shielded by the door jamb. Lita was prepared, too, as the heavy construction of planks came open. She uttered an incantation and cast her spell. A chorus of shrieks and cries sounded as the light created by Lita's casting blossomed forth and made the passageway bright. There were perhaps a dozen of the white pygmies and twice as many of the yellow-maned albino apes here. Caught unprepared by the sudden assault, Lita gave a shout, and Gord stayed out of the opening as the nomad warriors sent a pair of shafts into the turmoil beyond. As soon as he heard the clatter of their discarded bows, though, he jumped into the doorway, aimed rapidly, and hurled the small spear with all his strength. Jamut was there beside him, tulwar in hand, and the two rushed into the enemy. Pygmies and apes were still in disarray, milling about as they tried in vain to keep from being hindered by the globe of bright light that floated near the ceiling of the corridor. Their eyes, accustomed to darkness, bulged and ached as they were exposed to more illumination than they could stand. All right, so I'm breaking right here. So we have still quite a number of the albino pygmies and albino apes. Wonder at the interconnection between the two. Lita, of course, so what the idea is that these creatures are not used to anything super bright, and Lita's magic spell, which, you know, is a very simple thing. That is certainly a very good idea if, you know, at, not just for this, but for any Underdark, when you're going to go into battle, if, you know, you throw a bright light into the place where the enemy has to be caught by its light. And if you have these Underdark creatures, they should be taken aback by, a bright light spell that, illuminates everything. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 202 and the final paragraph. Gord was quickly separated from Jamut by the press of enemy bodies, but he didn't mind. Was too busy laying about with sword and dagger to notice anything but his targets. For fully 2 minutes he fought alone, and Lita was beside him holding the tulwar that had belonged to Nizami. "Where, Gord?" she shouted to him, pointing ahead of where they stood. "That one there is a spellcaster." Her warning came just in time. Gord saw that one of the pygmies was making passes in the air as the little man called out the last of his incantation and thrust out his hands toward the young adventurer, Gord leaped up and ahead in a vaulting jump. All the muscles in his body were stiffening. Then the feeling passed as quickly as it had come, and he landed in front of the startled little Demercrafter and wounded him before the pale midget knew what had happened. Now it was Gord's turn to be surprised. A small fighter nearby stabbed at the young thief, forcing him to dodge and parry instead of quickly finishing off the spell worker. Simultaneously, another lesser spellcrafter finished a work of his own, and Lita's magical illumination suddenly vanished in the confusion and darkness. The chief Demercrafter of the Pygmy Warband expected to slip away from his attackers, not reckoning with Gord's exceptional visual capacity. And if you remember, it's noted here that Lita is casually used a bow. Now she's using the tulwar. So whatever restrictions she has, or whatever she's allowed to use by, if she's using the clerical ability of Eclavdra, Eclavdra's High Priestess of Gratzt. So it seems like the edged and blood-drawing weapons are not, kept from Eclavdra. And is Eclavdra a fighter cleric? She's a cleric. And clerics do have combat ability, but they're, nowhere near as good as a fighter. Eclavdra, in this situation, might well be a dual-class fighter cleric. Now, we now know that the another thing these spellcasters, and one of the lesser ones can do, is a darkness spell to reverse continual light. All right. I'm going to restart. And it is page number 203 and the final paragraph. With his long dagger, Gord fended off the curved bladed polearm the fighter had thrust at him, knocking the weapon's hook portion aside so that it struck one of the baboons that was moving to assist in the fight. As the warrior tried to clear his weapon, and the dark suddenly engulfed the combatants, Gord kept his eye on the wounded spellcaster. The little fellow turned away and ran down the corridor, and around the corner to be clear of the melee. When he got a fair distance down this escape passage, he turned, bent on summoning some new mischief. The pale pygmy's head, already huge, nearly started from his head as he saw the supposedly night-blind human figure bounding after him, dodging from side to side as he advanced with sword and dagger. At the ready, behind Gord came a small crowd of apes and pygmies, not chasing him. Pardon me. Not chasing him so much as they were escaping from the swords of his companions. "You cursed oaf!" a gray-clad midget shouted, gesturing and muttering furiously. A fat, crackling streak of violet-blue electricity issued from the little man's hands and came close to striking Gord full in the chest. The young thief threw himself to the side as the sizzling bolt was released, and the full force of it missed him, but the stroke was still close enough and strong enough to burn him and knock him flat. Lightning continued down the corridor and played among the caster's own fellows, dropping several of them in their tracks. Then it hit the wall where the passageway turned a corner, and it came sizzling straight back along the corridor it had just traversed. From where he lay, dazed and nauseated from the shock of the bolt's passage, Ford saw the bolt blazing back in the direction from which it had come. An instant later, he heard a long, sizzling sound, immediately drowned out by a shrill scream, and the pygmy keeled over, dead from his own electrical attack. Ford managed to climb to his feet and stumble back through the passageway, stepping over the dead bodies, getting back to where Lita was swinging away furiously with a sword that was too large for her to handle. Nomads had been blind since the moment Lita's globe of light was extinguished. She had shouted for them to stay behind her and was single-handedly keeping off five or six of the pale little fighters and their yellow maned baboons. When Gord began hewing them from behind, they fell like wheat before a scythe. At this point, the survivors scrambled and got away as fast as they could. The battle was over. All right. So right there, now we see a difference here. Before the pygmy gnomes, men and the albino apes. The albino apes are certainly kind of like it was said, like losses, and they are, you know, like falling back. Now, it's posted here from G123 that Eclavdra was at the time a dual cleric fighter of 10th level each. It's comment that this is a really fun little underground jaunt with the dungeon exploration and this massive battle. And it's good to see Gord here coming up against foes who are not either super powerful or super weak, so that it is a much more, back and forth kind of battle. Now, these spellcasters, now this one has cast a lightning bolt, and it's reversed, bounced back, and killed him. Gord obviously escaped from its first passage, and as he was prone, did not need to try to escape from his second, the reverse of the lightning bolt, which ends up killing the caster. All right. I'm going to restart, give a little time left, and it is page 204, and the final paragraph. While the men of Thufi regained their brush candle from within the treasure chamber and sought for stragglers to dispose of, Ord and Lita followed the signs left by the fleeing band of underground dwellers. Only a handful had managed to escape. They left a trail that was easy to follow. For several boar wounds that still bled, it led the two down the spiral steps to the old well room and disappeared through the hole that led to the pool beyond. "I feared it," Lita said to Gord. "They must use this place from some other access point. When we bathed and made love here earlier, we were seen or heard. Those baboons probably have noses keen enough to follow scent." "Yes and no, love," Gord replied. "You're right about our being detected, I think, but not about the apelings. They don't have noses that good. Don't forget I handled a lot of dead ones, and I got a good look at them. They followed us by looking at the signs in the dust. I think those so-called baboons are nothing more than the same species as the pygmy men, degenerated perhaps, or bred to serve as hounds." So here, there is a connection. These are not apelings. These are actually They're like the albino pygmies, but they're bred for certain tasks. So, you know, we have here that the remainder of the Sul have been using their own people, you know, to use as not just like cannon fodder, but also, as Gord puts it, as tracking hounds. So Gord, once more, you know, Gord is insightful and he's able to discern, which has always been, you know, a big trait in these stories. The ability to disguise and the ability to see through the disguise. And the comments, it's another Sul freak show here. All right, this is like the original Sul freak show. I'm going to restart. And it is page 205, the fourth paragraph down from the top. Vita didn't believe him until she too had examined several corpses after they returned to the treasure room. Devil dirt, Gord, these things are men, she exclaimed with revulsion in her voice. Not men, actually, Gord said. Pygmy spawn. Although albinoid descendants of once humans who have probably dwelled underground for 100 generations. It isn't surprising, though. Slavery is just a step away from deliberate breeding for desired characteristics, degenerate or otherwise. I have seen the lossals that the vile Uz breeds, too. A disgusting thing to do to human, humanoid, or ape. So there, yes, very much like the lossals, you know, bred down, and you know, of course the lossals are a breed of orc mixed with carnivorous ape, and it's hard to tell what these albino baboon-like human baboons are bred from.
I wish we had more pictures. I don't think we have had one yet.
Other than the very beginning, I haven't seen a picture in the book. At the very beginning, there is a picture of Gord at the City Out of Mind.
Right.
And that's all we've gotten so far. So, but, you know, the pictures are an expensive addition. This is the first of the new Infinities, so I'd imagine that they were really going to try to cut down on expenses. And then it became their moneymaker, you know. The Gord books were their big, big, big moneymaker because they really, from New Affinities, they had so little to offer at the beginning. I think their big game was Cyborg Commando. And I'm not sure what else came out from New Affinities. I know there was Cyborg Commando and a couple of modules, and it was, I thought, a very piss-poor game, so, you know, I'm not sure if it ever was caught on in any degree whatsoever. But maybe Gygax was a little worried about doing another fantasy game so soon away from... Oh, what am I saying? Yes, but they did do fantasy modules. Frank Metzner did Ashiba Greek Africa. Another guy did a town called the Town of Baldemar. Gygax did a game called The Abduction of Good King something or other. Those are three of the modules that I remember. Ah, there was another module. And I'm not sure who wrote it. Maybe it was Rob Kuntz or maybe it was Gygax. It was called The Convert. So there's at least, you know, four fantasy modules from New Infinities. I don't think any one of them was, you know, any big kind of deal there. And I know it was either before New Infinity shut down or maybe a little later that Rob Quint split off and did his own company where the Garden of the Plant Master and four Zagig modules, I believe. Or no, not Zagig, Zane modules. All right, from this, I'm going to stop right here because we're just about at 7. And I think we can see here We're on page 205. I like the comment that, you know, comparing these guys to Lossels, they're very much like it. All right, and here is Darrow Peta of Albina Apes and Pygmies. And I guess that is a quote. Is a quote direct from the Sea of Death. So yeah,
the guy looks at them and it makes a little bit of an attempt to stat them up.
All right. Now, yeah, because these are not Darrow. And I think all that we get to see of them later on, they I think that coming post Gygax, there's a lot of confusion about these apes and albino albino pygmies and the Darrow. And but I'm sure Gygax never refers to them as Darrow. And later on, they never refer to them or this wonderful adventure, because it is New Infinities. It's such a shame. That would be a good illustration. They do seem something like that, although they're supposed to have good coats of hair and fur.
Mm-hmm.
So these are little, like, hairless things. But they that does give, like, a good picture. Chris has posted a picture in the... No, I'm sorry. Was that who posted that?
That was me. Yeah, it was also from Darrowpedia. Here I can put the link.
From the Darrowpedia, yeah, there's a picture of kind of, I don't know if you could call them apelings or like Gord, but they're hairless, whereas Gords are supposed to be full of hair. All right, it is 7:01. And I'm going to call, this was a good Monday. Now, everybody remember, tomorrow there's no show, no recording, and we'll be back on Wednesday. So I'm calling in Craig. He's not going to go anyway, but I'm going to try to stop the recording.